Welcome to the David McQueen Show, a weekly podcast where through insights and interviews, I explore what good leadership looks like. My main aim is to keep the podcast long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest and without those annoying adverts. So sit back and enjoy this episode of the David McQueen Show. The worst loneliness is not to be comfortable with yourself. So says Mark Twain. Now, one of the most iconic photographs of the 20th century is one of John F. Kennedy leaning over the desk in the Oval Office reading his newspapers in 1961. The caption of this picture by the photographer George Kames reads, "The loneliest job in the world." Now, I don't know about you, but I have no ambition to be a political leader, and I can just imagine the amount of stuff that gets put across the desk of leaders, whether you are in governance or whether you are in opposition, must be absolutely incredible. But my thing here is not so much about the role itself, but what we really mean when we start talking about things being the loneliest job or the loneliest thing in the world. And for many years, the mantra about leadership being lonely or a lonely role is one that has been repeated continuously. But I honestly believe that it doesn't have to be this way. Of course, leadership, whether that's organizational at the top or in a department, can be a really tough job. But I don't believe that it has to be lonely. So for a bit of context here, before I started executive coaching in the business world, I spent a lot of time coaching and learning about leadership development with head teachers in education. I've always been fascinated with the way that teachers have been able to progress from being in the classroom to actually being heads of schools, be it primary, secondary, and even college, and having to go away from just being that teacher to actually managing this whole organization. And a lot has changed since I first began on that journey. With heads, or since I first started out, they were just headmasters, but now they've become executive principals. And even more recently, the development being CEOs of multi-academy trusts. A very political issue, but one that still exists nonetheless. And the one thing about this new advancement in education is that schools or schooling is becoming more businesslike, especially for those heads who run primary and secondary school collectives across the UK. The irony here is that while leadership of schooling has become more businesslike, for the record, I'm not really a fan of this, but the same story of feeling quite lonely as a leader is repeated, not just in education, but in business as well. And individuals have been thrust into these high-stake roles, get paid a lot of money, and get positioned as heroes. And very often, many leaders, some who should not be in there, let's be very honest about this, are very often winging it in this space. And so in many situations, they feel isolated. And as somebody who has been an executive coach one-to-one and has also run group coaching programs, I know that people do feel isolated. But whether you are a leader in education, business, or the nonprofit sector, I want to focus on this episode of what you can do so that your journey doesn't have to be lonely. So a couple of years ago, I was brought in as a facilitator for an organization called The Storytellers, and we were working with one of the UK's largest grocery stores. Now, this organization was going through massive changes internally, and there were threats from other grocery stores in the market, from the heavy discounters to individuals who were imitating the innovation of this company, and this was a company that stood out for quite a while. And as part of my role as a facilitator was that we went through a massive 8 week plus, I think it was 11 weeks plus program using the power of storytelling to guide staff through the changes ahead. Now, I'm a big fan of storytelling and it was a real honor to be able to work alongside this organization. And I do believe that storytelling is an essential part of any leader's toolkit. And I will obviously be addressing this in a future episode. But what struck me most in this company was the collegiate, or the client that we were working with, was the collegiate culture shared through the stories of the many of its leaders, whether they were leading the stores, whether they were leading regions, or even senior in the actual head office. that even though on all sides they were being squeezed by really tight profit margins and the rapid progress of technology and innovation, that the human side of compassion and empathy that so often distinguishes good leaders from great ones was ever present. You could, as they would say, you could cut their arms and you could see the cultural DNA within their blood. It's a bit of a weird picture, but yeah, work with me. And it was part of the cultural DNA of the company to ensure that leaders were not left out on their own. And it was amazing to hear some incredibly emotional stories of leaders who were given support when facing mental health challenges, for example. It was also empowering to hear that staff were willing to live the values of diversity when challenged about underrepresented voices in leadership, whether they were a lack of women in leadership or whether it was about making sure that there were representation of race and ability across the company. And of course, as with all organizations, it wasn't flawless and there was still work to be done. But it really made me think about how other companies and nonprofit organizations can create a value-based culture which supports rather than idolizes leadership. So if you as a leader are feeling lonely, part of the solution would be to honestly address the cultural DNA. A theme we focused on in the last episode when we were talking about value-based leadership. And most leaders, be they in the C-suite or whether they're departmental, would have a team around them, whether it's a senior leadership management team in a school, whether it's the executive C-suite in a business, or you know, whether it's a social impact or advisory board of a charity or social enterprise. And tough decisions have to be made, and often the buck may stop with one person giving a call on a specific item or domain, but in the main, leadership at that level is surely about working with others. So that's one. It's about making sure that you have a cultural DNA or a culture that really supports leaders so that they don't feel isolated. And whilst they may have been promoted into spaces and there may not be as many peers to talk to, that cultural DNA allows for leaders to not feel isolated. A second point for me is being part of a collective of people who share similar thinking. So a number of years ago, I was part of a program called Connect by a company called Wavelength. And this program took a number of us from corporate and social organizations on a journey of collaboration and learning over the space of about 6 months. We learned how a number of leaders from blue chip organizations and incredible nonprofit organizations like the South Bank Centre in London and Her Majesty's Prison Services, how they cope with loneliness or frustration in their job. We also learned from organizations like Southwest Airlines. And whether we visited them on site or got together for masterclasses with invited guests from the said organizations, it was a rich and empowering collective to be part of. The discussions from these equipped us not only with lasting friendships, but the kind of resilience and reminders that we didn't have to be lonely as leaders, and that we should not be afraid to reach out for help if we needed it. And so very often when I have worked with leaders, it's so, how do I say, it's not tiresome, but it's so consistent how many leaders don't reach out because we feel that if we do ask other people for advice or feedback or their opinion on something, that it may appear that our leadership is not as strong as it should be. And I don't think that has to be the case. So I know that I've had the opportunity of speaking, and I know I've got friends who have spoken it at an organization in the UK like the Academy of Chief Executives, which is a peer-to-peer membership organization for CEOs and businesses and owners of small to mid-sized businesses. There's another one as well, I think it's called Vistage, which is a bit more international, but again, it has the same principle. These are organizations where, as leaders, you get together with other leaders of organizations ranging from, you know, millions to hundreds of thousands to multi-million pounds, where a lot of stuff can be learned. There are white papers shared, people will come and speak, and you get an understanding as to how you can navigate a lot of those spaces. For me, for example, I'm really keen about value-based leadership. I'm really keen about how people can communicate even better. And, you know, one of the areas that I'm being called upon quite a lot to speak on quite recently is about how leaders can really and truly embed a notion of diversity as part of their organization. And for me, organizations like the ones I mentioned are really powerful in being able to be exposed to that kind of thinking, but also to share best practice. In the education sector, I've worked with the networks like SSAT and Pixel, who again provide massive peer-to-peer based membership platform for senior leaders in education. And they collaborate to share best practice and excellence within their organizations. Now, I'm sure that there are others, but I highlight these peer networks as a reminder for senior leaders in whatever domain to either join or explore. And if they don't fit your remit, then by all means, go ahead and create your own mastermind group. There are enough resources out there in order for people to be able to do that. A third suggestion for me is that of a coach or a mentor. Now, you might say, I expect that from you, David, as an executive coach, you're going to say this anyway. But let me try and explain. Now, historically, mentoring has been seen as more for those who are emerging into leadership, and coaches for those who are already in senior roles. But I don't think it is as black and white as that. As somebody who has mentored and who also coaches, one of the things I find that is a point of real added value for the people who I've worked with is that I come with an angle that they may not have been able to see, and that those who are close to them may not be able to see it as well. And I believe that the good thing about a coach or a mentor is that they tend to be not emotionally connected with your organization or with your family or your friends. And so what that means is we can give you a more standoff approach. We can ask you those questions about issues being raised in your work. And we can also offer advice in domains that either staff or friends or family don't actually know. Because as standard as an executive coach or mentor, we will usually have an understanding of how businesses operate anyway, in principle. So recently I was explaining to a friend of mine my coaching practice for senior executives called The Sweet Spot, S-U-I-T-E, a name I'm very proud of, by the way. And her question to me was, how was it that I was able to go in and coach men and women of multi-million pound businesses and organizations without having run one of these myself? And it stopped me in my tracks for a minute, but then I gently explained that all leaders are humans. And of course, I can't hold a conversation or have authority with a client unless I have a good grasp of business management or organizational development. So yes, I understand finance and KPIs and targets and margins. And I understand how there are specific business metrics that need to be met and how leaders can be able to negotiate that. But usually my domain expertise is in helping clients in positions of leadership to lead people. To understand that not just their staff behaviors, but their own behaviors have to be examined and explored. What challenges them? Often going into deep personal issues and sometimes insecurities that they would never share with a colleague or friends or family for fear of maybe losing authority or appearing weak. And a skilled coach has no qualms in challenging leaders on this, as we are aware that alignment with personal communication and domain expertise is what makes for great leaders. So you know what? Get yourself a coach or a mentor and talk regularly. And stop being afraid to ask those questions that too often can cause untold stress and sleepless nights unless they're tackled head on. Now, a final one for me that I believe is a real helper for leaders is about collective learning. Now, I love when I get asked to facilitate executive retreats or away days and executive meetings. And very often it is as much about getting leaders to appreciate and be aware of each other's communication style as it is about reviewing and hitting targets. Because at the end of the day, we can't do these things on our own. And loneliness can often be self-enforced because leaders avoid conflict or they may dominate in such a way as to stifle objections to their plans. And getting away as a leadership team out of the office or school or hospital or whatever organization you run can allow for some space to think and reaffirm the collaborative nature that leadership really is. There is something beautiful about watching teams get together and guards being dropped when you are out of the office and ideas can be shared and people learn from each other, which doesn't take away from the authority that you have as a leader. It doesn't take away from the authority that you have or the gravitas that you have as somebody who runs a department or runs a business. But being in a space where there is that collaborative learning, it allows your staff to see another side of you, to see that you're on the same journey with them. Without, again, as I say, losing the concept or understanding that you are that leader. So these are just four ways leaders can combat loneliness. And I'm sure there are a number of others I have missed, but you know, heck, this is just a start. This is a conversation piece. This is how we move that that needle away from being, oh my God, I'm so lonely, it's the loneliest job in the world, and I feel like no one actually understands me. And it's important to surround yourself with a dream team. Not only within the place of work that you have, yes, you might have your board of advisors, or you may have your senior leadership team, or what have you, but also outside as well. And the reason why I think it's important is because it's not just about making sure that you look after your own sanity, but for the sanity of those you work with as well. So I thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope that these tips have helped somebody in leadership to have a think about who your support network is, and how that support network or how that dream team can help you to become a great leader, or even a greater leader than you are. And in next week's episode, I will be exploring what actually keeps leaders up at night. And this should make an interesting conversation. So please remember, this podcast is not only on SoundCloud, but can also be found on iTunes now as well. So whatever platform you have, go ahead and share or comment and rate. And I appreciate both your time to listen and your feedback, and look forward to having you tune in to the next episode of the David McLean Show. Until then, take care.